Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And we made it once again to you Friday on the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity back with us today. And Jim, we celebrated in your absence the House repeal of the president's health care plan and actually celebrated Mitch McConnell's vow, whether or not he'll be able to come through on it or not, we'll see, to actually force a vote on it in the Senate. He certainly didn't promise a victory, but promised a vote on it. And now, of course, with the House Republicans having done their job on the full repeal, they're going after this thing piece by piece. And one of them, of course, is making sure that no taxpayer funds are used to pay for abortion, which was a huge part of the controversy last year. Bart Stupak was on the pro-life side. Then he gave in to the compromise, which wasn't really a compromise. And now John Boehner, among others, saying that this is going to be a major priority in the coming days.
Our members feel very strongly about the sanctity of human life. We listened to the American people. We made a commitment to the American people and our pledge to America. And we're continuing to fulfill our commitment.
I see this as big good news on two fronts. First of all, saving taxpayer dollars. And secondly, making social conservatives fully aware that they are not being ignored.
Absolutely. I was going to say that the first words that kind of came to mind when I saw them, you know, putting this front and center and making this one of their early priorities is it is a beautiful maneuver. One, at the moment when people are kind of, you know, there's some discussion of, you know, is the Tea Party primarily a fiscally conservative movement? Is it a socially conservative movement? Is there going to be tensions there? This is kind of your perfect example of an issue that unifies everybody, and everybody can find their reason to oppose taxpayer-funded abortion, but actually they're going to do something about it. Secondly, if you'd ask President Obama, what do you think of this? He'd say, oh, I'm strongly opposed to it, and he'd insist that Obamacare, as it was passed, did not permit taxpayer funding of abortion. Now, my attitude is if the National Right to Life Committee doesn't like it, then there's a problem there.
Right.
If pro-lifers aren't convinced, then when a whole bunch of pro-choice people insist that it's not paying for taxpayer abortion, I just kind of aren't willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. So the first thing is, if President Obama really believes that taxpayer funds should not be funding abortions, well, then why don't you sign it into law, Mr. President?
Exactly.
Secondly, if it's they probably argue, well, it's redundant from the legislation that's passed. Well, if it's redundant, then what's the harm? Sign it into law anyway. So I think they're really going to do a good job of trying to, you know, catch the president and a lot of pro-choice, but ostensibly anti-taxpayer funding of abortion Democrats caught between a rock and a hard place. My guess is Harry Reid will once again do his best to see it never comes to the floor. And I think the Republicans will have the easier argument there to say, look, if you disagree on this bill, disagree, you know, but just vote on it. Tell us where you stand one way or the other. Don't hide. And I think if there's anything the American people do not want their lawmakers to be doing right now, it is hiding from big decisions like this.
Yeah. And of course, you know, a lot of folks would say, well, the president signed that executive order and that is now off the table. So Republicans are just wasting time. And we tried to get bring in Congressman Bart Stupak, Congresswoman Kathy Dahlkemper, Congressman Steve Driehaus, who voted for this despite the fact the abortion language never got changed. And oh, yeah, none of them are around anymore. It seems like their constituents actually cared about this.
Yeah, you know, their constituents were not persuaded that this is there. So the argument this is a waste of time is just not going to I doubt it resonates in many districts that Democrats really want to win back.
All right, let's move on to the bad martini now. And the president, right around the midterm election day, was pretty much right where you'd want him in the polls if you're looking for big Republican gains. He was down actually below 40%, according to CBS. NBC's poll had him in the low to mid-40s. Now, according to the MSNBC poll, he's up to 53. CBS has him just under 50%, so he's clearly making gains. I don't know if this is due to what he got passed in the lame duck session, his tone at Tucson, which clearly went over pretty well according to the polls, or this is a blip or something we need to be more worried about, but clearly the numbers are not trending in a way that we would like.
Yeah, well, I had a couple readers write in, not quite in a panic, but saying, Jim, I'm seeing this, you know, reassure me. Tell me this isn't 2012 isn't a done deal. And I told them 2012 is not a done deal. I don't think we should be that surprised. And then Obama has had a good couple of weeks, I think, starting with the tax deal, which appeared to be a nice bipartisan compromise, which is what a lot of voters say that they want. In addition to everything else, I think the Tucson Memorial Service, look, he's looking presidential. I had said that even though he'd been president for 2 years, this was the first time he seemed like a president. And Greg, on top of all that, pandas! We've got pandas! The Chinese are letting us keep the pandas for 5 more years. Yay!
Well, that's a relief.
They own the country. But anyway, so all of this is going together. But at the same time, I think a useful and interesting indicator is that the right track, wrong direction numbers are there's been a very mild improvement, but no, you know, people still think we're largely going in the wrong direction in this country. This, you know, reader had said, what's going to, you know, what could trip up Obama in the coming weeks, months, years? And I said, well, the first one is obviously the unemployment number, which we saw a significant drop in last month, but a lot of that was people leaving the workforce.
Right.
If you see even modest improvement in the economy, people will start looking for work again. And right now, the number of people who are in that magical category of discouraged workers who don't count towards the official unemployment rate are pretty darn high. I believe it's at a record. When they start looking for jobs again and not finding them, they get added back into the unemployment number. So the idea of the unemployment number hitting above 10% doesn't seem all that unthinkable. And I think that would be a psychological blow to any perception that Obama is doing a good job in the economy. And then the second number I would watch is gas prices. Greg, you're not too far away from I am. I'm seeing a lot of significantly above $3 a gallon here in Northern Virginia. And that means, for, you know, kind of back of the hand calculations, if it's $3 in winter, $4 in summer doesn't seem all that implausible. And we all know the mood in the summer of 2008 when gas prices were hitting unbelievable highs. So those are two big economic indicators that I think could have people really souring on the president really fast. Right now, he's had a couple of good news cycles, and we shouldn't be terribly surprised to see it inching up enough a bit. They're, you know, even though they're improving, they're really not where you'd want to be with a re-election campaign getting closer and closer.
I'm so confused because I thought he was going to talk to the folks in the Middle East about the price of oil, and then everything was going to be fine because they would see his side of everything and there would be doves flying and choir singing, and I thought everything would be fine with the Middle East. But
Greg,
apparently
I thought
not.
We'd have big windmills on our cars by now and we'd just be blowing our way all around. Well, anyway.
Exactly. Well, on to the third martini today. And Jim, I could be wrong because, you know, we did have a great day after the midterm elections, but this could be my favorite martini of all time. And let's just get right into it. Kudos to the FBI and the Justice Department for their rounding up what is believed to be the largest mafia bust in history. And while the crimes and the allegations are very serious, and we wish the best to the prosecutors if, in fact, all these allegations are true, it's the nicknames of these people that we absolutely love. Anyone from Tony Bagels to Johnny Bandana. You know, I was trying to think of what a good one for me would be. I don't know if you thought about that. You know, a Greek and an Irishman don't exactly get usually lumped in with the mafia, but, you know, Greg the Greek just by itself would be pretty good, I think.
I was thinking Greg I. Columbus. And as for myself, it goes back to my father. We've been called vulgarity for quite some time now. So, but though all of them are good, you mentioned a few of them. Tony Bagels, I just picture somebody saying, "Don't mess with him, or he'll smear you all over the sidewalk." The other one was there was one guy who was referred to as Junior Lollipops. And Greg, that doesn't strike me as a terribly intimidating nickname. That you're not even full lollipops. You're Junior Lollipops. Unless your father is like Telly Savalas, there's really no good reason to have that nickname. And I'm looking at the front page of the Wall Street Journal, and they've got Luigi Minocchio, known as Baby Shanks, Big Tony, guy named Nerves. And then there's one name named Angelo Spada with no nickname. And I'm just sitting there thinking, wouldn't that be kind of disappointing to be a mobster and just not get a nickname?
Absolutely. You feel like you're not appreciated.
So what do you think of Angelo? I think we just call him Angelo. I don't see anything distinctive about him. He doesn't have big thumbs. He doesn't have a big head, you know. One guy had the nickname Firehawk, and I'm sitting there thinking, is he dressing up at night and setting criminals on fire or something? It's a very Marvel Comics superhero nickname. But the idea of, I think it's just a really disappointment. If you're a gangster and you don't get a nickname, I think you probably just need to look in the mirror and ask yourself, as Bob Etheridge would, who are you?
Exactly. I particularly like Vinny Carwash. My suspicion is that he launders the money. And another one of my favorites, and this is a guy whose appearance has apparently changed over the years, a guy known as either Fat Dennis or Little Dennis. So either he's been in there a long time
Atkins.
or...
He was Fat Dennis. There's like your Nutrisystem commercial waiting to happen.
Right.
Back when I was running my gang, I was a big fat guy, and I realized I couldn't keep up with the young punks, so... Thanks to Jenny Craig. Okay, go ahead.
That's fine. So on that light note, we will leave you for this week. For Jim Vulgarity of NationalReview.com, I am Greg the Greek, and we will see you Monday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.